Chapter 13. The flight back to Varlay was nearly as silent as the ruined forest of Adorna. After we'd left the herd of mega monsters behind, my team had boarded the airship, stowed away their luggage, and taken their seats, all without uttering a single word. Even Varlith and Gawain called a ceasefire on their insult war, and the pair of mages closed their eyes and fell asleep before we even took off. Part of me wondered if their nap was from exhaustion or if it was their way of avoiding conversation. But regardless, I wished the tension between my friends and I would vanish. I hadn't expected such strong opposition from my fellow teammates. But then again, I supposed we couldn't always hold the same opinions when it came to military efforts. War was never black and white. And while I still believed I was correct in my thought process, the other mages weren't willing to take on the Horde, so I couldn't punish them for that.
"Shall we keep you company instead, Master?"
Utuni spoke up, and the Snake Goddess's voice was particularly slick as it moved through my consciousness.
"We would never turn you away, as those disloyal friends of yours do."
"They aren't disloyal," I muttered as I glanced at Gawain, and the golden-haired mage's mouth quivered as he dreamt. "They're just unsure."
"Well, they should trust your judgment completely,"
Fi declared.
"You are the most powerful mage in all of Mistral, after all.
They are lucky to call themselves your companions in the first place,"
Miralee added, and her voice dripped with disgust.
"Such whiny, ungrateful humans. They are just jealous of your power."
"Don't insult them," I growled. "They're my team. Show them the same respect you would to me." I expected hesitation, but the monster goddesses fell quiet.
"Sorry, Master,"
Fi muttered.
"My apologies, Master,"
Utuni quietly sighed.
"Sorry,"
Miralee piped in, and her voice was timid as she apologized. "Look, it was just a disagreement. They'll come around," I insisted with a firm tone. "We can't always agree on everything."
"I'll always agree with what you say."
Miralee flattered me in an attempt to make me forget her negative words, but I wasn't interested in speaking with the Dark Goddesses any longer. So I refocused on my mental wards, and the boxes that contained the Arkans slammed shut. I enjoyed the emptiness when the wards fell back into place, but unfortunately for me, once the Arkans were quiet, so was everything else. So I slumped down into my seat and took time to reflect. A thousand thoughts raced through my mind, and no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get the image of the herd of mega monsters out of my head. I'd never seen so many monsters, especially ones of such varied species, all in one place before. It was difficult to fathom, and I had so many questions. Why were they gathered? Where did they come from? And what was their plan? The Shadowscape was an erratic dimension, but monster manifestations of this magnitude rarely occurred without reason, and I had to consider the possibility of more sinister events to come. The possibility of another Arkan crossed my mind, but I wasn't sure what to make of that thought. Every goddess I'd taken on had a total of 3 monsters under their control, and the herd of mega-sized creatures surpassed that amount several times over. I also thought about the monsters' intentions, if there were any, and weighed the difficulty of taking on the herd. The Sycorot and the Vincrimsel weren't particularly smart, and if it weren't for their massive size and proportional strength, they wouldn't be any worse than any other Grade B monsters. Of course, their protective defenses weren't anything to take lightly either. The Vincrimsel could regenerate its severed limbs, and the Sycorot had its nearly impenetrable exoskeleton. I wondered if the other monsters we'd seen had similar traits, or ones even more powerful. If we were to take them on, we would have to give it our all.
"Boss, is everything okay?"
I stepped out of my mind for a moment to see Dio was perched in my lap. And the saber-toothed cat's yellow eyes were concerned as he looked me up and down.
"Everything's fine, buddy," I assured him. "We're all just tired." My familiar didn't seem satisfied with that answer, and he inclined his tawny head toward my wife and girlfriends.
"Then why are they facing away from us?"
Once we boarded the airship, we'd changed our seating arrangement, and Nia and Layla were seated beside each other with me to the left of them. The pair of beautiful mages were off in their own worlds, completely zoned out, and much like Gawain and Varlith, it was hard to tell whether the pair was simply exhausted or agitated with me. I looked back to Dio and shook my head. "I think everyone could use some space." My familiar frowned as if he intended to protest, but instead, he sat back down in my lap and rested his fuzzy head on my leg. His comically large fangs poked into my knee, but I didn't have the heart to complain. I was lucky to have the company. So I took a deep breath and focused on petting Dio. Everyone kept to themselves for the entirety of the flight, but every so often I would catch my wife and girlfriend glancing at me, or at each other. And though they offered me thin-lipped smiles or the occasional wink, I could sense emotions were still tense. They had hated to disagree with me, but I knew marriage wasn't always about the husband and wife getting along every minute of every day. Still, things were no better once we landed back in Varlay. Gawain and Varlith shuffled off toward the front yard as soon as we departed the craft, and the rest of the team followed suit. Once we were clear of the landing pad and reached the circular drive, we paused to say our goodbyes for the evening.
"See you tomorrow, Samina,"
Gawain asked as he rubbed his eyelids, and his emerald eyes were still dull with sleep.
"Bright and early,"
I sighed as I glanced at the setting sun beyond us. The sky was a gorgeous mix of oranges, reds, and lavender, and while it was beautiful, it meant that night and the subsequent morning weren't too far away. "Our debriefing with Sleet and Grand Mage Kinnifik is at dawn. We can't be late."
"Of course it is,"
Gawain grumbled, and Varlith slapped him on the back.
"Buck up, medics,"
the surly gypsy teased.
"It's not as if you had any grand plans for tonight."
Gawain glared at Varlith, but then he gave up and just smirked at the dark-eyed banisher. Then Varlith's mirthful expression turned serious as he addressed me.
"We'll see you, Griff. Try to relax. Get some sleep."
"I will. Thanks, Varlith,"
I said, and with a firm nod, the banisher and the fire mage headed up the hill, which left Aaron, Layla, Nia, and I alone in the driveway. My women gave me smiles as we quietly stood in a semicircle.
"I need to use the facility something awful,"
Layla admitted as she glanced at the house.
"Using the bathroom on an airship never feels like a good idea."
"Make her, Layla. There's no subtlety with you, is there?"
Aaron laughed at the brunette mage.
"We've all been in bed together multiple times. I think we're beyond subtlety."
Layla rolled her eyes, and then she hitched her satchel up higher on her arm.
"Speaking of bed, would you like some company tonight, Griffy?"
"I would never turn down the opportunity to lay with you, Bethel," I smirked. "You're all more than welcome to join me."
"I'm down,"
Aaron grinned happily.
"Me too,"
Nia agreed with a nod.
"It's all settled then,"
Layla declared.
"I'll invite Syra and Freya too. I'm sure they missed us."
"Excellent idea,"
I smiled, and Layla grinned.
"I'll see you inside, Griffy,"
the petite summoner giggled, and then she ran up the drive and into the house.
"I'm going to go freshen up a bit and then I'll join you,"
Aaron decided as she watched Layla vanish inside.
"I don't exactly smell the greatest after that journey, and you deserve to have a clean girlfriend in your nice sheets."
Before I could say a word, the orange-haired mimic kissed me on the cheek and then bounded away after Layla. Once Aaron and Layla were gone, only Nia and I remained, and after a moment of awkward smiles, we silently walked through the front door after them. With my bag in hand, I ascended the spiral staircase and tried to relax my mind. After everything that had happened over the past few days, I simply wanted to lay down in my huge bed with my women and fall asleep. I made it to the second floor, but as I unlocked the door to my bedroom, Nia's voice stopped me in my tracks.
Griff?
Yes, I replied with my hand frozen on the doorknob.
Can we talk?
When I turned to face her, I was greeted by a pair of weary blue eyes. Nia had been silent as she followed me up the stairs, and I'd taken that to be an indication of anger, but the way she tugged at the ends of her hair told me otherwise. Of course, I said. Do you want to come in? Nia nodded, and once we filtered into the bedroom, I dropped my travel pack on the hardwood floor beside the wardrobe, and then sat on the edge of the bed so I could undo my bootlaces. Nia stood above me as I undressed, with her arms across her chest and her teeth biting the corner of her mouth. Seeing Nia Kennefic in a nervous state was not an everyday occurrence, and I knew our discussion was going to be serious. Before I could ask what was going on, though, Nia spoke up.
Griff, I'm sorry,
she began,
for everything that happened today.
Don't be.
I am, though,
she interrupted, and then she sat down beside me on the bed.
My mother always told us to never go to bed angry, so I wanted to clear the air and apologize to you before the others came in.
I'm not angry, Nia. I'm frustrated. But it isn't because of you, I sighed. I don't blame you at all. I promise. I just feel helpless.
I know how you must feel,
Nia murmured, and she rested her hand on my arm.
It's hard to walk away when people are in danger, especially for someone with as big a heart as yours.
Thanks, I muttered. She bit her lip and then continued.
Look, I just don't feel comfortable making the call without consulting my father and the headmaster first. And after our battle in Adorna, I don't know, I was afraid.
You? I asked in surprise. Afraid?
While I was asleep in the infirmary, I had terrible nightmares,
Nia confessed before she paused for a moment to gather her thoughts. Then she pivoted her body to face me, and she brushed a strand of silver blonde hair away from her face.
Sometimes I was alone. Other times I was with you or Syra, or Layla. It was a rotation. In every dream we would be pitted against a monster, each more terrifying and stronger than the last, and every time we would be within a hair's breadth of victory. We'd rejoice, but it was premature, because the same thing would always happen. My magic disappeared, and without it, the monster would win.
When she stopped again, Nia's blue eyes were on the verge of tears, and suddenly, I realized what my wife was so afraid of. Your ability, and not to mention the battle haunts you, I said softly. The magic you wielded. You make jokes about it to Layla, reference it around your father and the headmaster, propose it as a secret weapon to face the Megas. But you're afraid of how it could affect you.
Yes,
Nia nodded, and the mage's face was drawn.
I can't even explain how I managed such magic in the first place. My elemental attacks overwhelmed me as I threw them at the Sycorot, and suddenly the elements didn't feel as separate as they usually do. It was like the different types of magic began to bleed together inside of me. Using that magic, it felt out of control. But what scares me more is how wonderful it felt.
I understand what that's like, I murmured. It's not quite the same, but when I first utilized the magic of the Arkans, it felt dirty, wrong even. Scary because I wasn't used to that type of magic, but at the same time, the power was awesome.
I lost control because I was afraid,
Nia confessed as she dropped her gaze.
I couldn't handle the magic, and my body wasn't strong enough. I wasn't strong enough.
I took Nia's hands and looked into her eyes. You're the strongest person I know, Nia Kinefic. Truly, you are. You're an amazing elementalist. Not to mention you're wicked smart and can accomplish anything you set your mind to.
Thanks, Griff,
Nia whispered. When you passed out, I was afraid too, I admitted to her. When your mana depleted, I was so scared I'd lost you. Of everything I've ever faced, the thought of never hearing you call me farm boy or yokel or husband was the worst thing I ever imagined.
Of all the things.
The ashen-haired mage smiled.
My insults are what you miss the most.
Of course, Lady Kinefic, I grinned. Nia laughed lightly, and then her features softened.
Look, I understand how badly you wanted to take on that hurt,
the elementalist offered as she touched my arm.
But I didn't feel right about the idea of taking on another mega without explicit approval to do so.
I know, I said. You wanted to do the right thing. I get it. But tomorrow, I want to talk to Sleet about everything. See what he thinks. He and your father need to know this is even worse than we'd imagined.
I agree.
Nia nodded and let out a long sigh. I love you, Nia, I whispered into her ear as I pulled my wife close. One disagreement isn't going to change that, I promise.
I love you too, Griff,
Nia murmured back, and then we shared an intimate and deep kiss. I was glad we had resolved the tension between us, and relief spread throughout me as we kissed. Shall we cuddle up for a bit while we wait for the others? I asked.
Sounds perfect, farm boy.
Nia smiled, and then we laid down in our favorite snuggle position with Nia on my chest and me on my back. I played with my wife's long, silky hair as we waited for the other mages to join us, and as I fell into the familiar rhythm of stroking the silver tresses, my mind began to wander. Luckily, I wasn't lost for too long, though, because a few minutes after we'd laid down, there was a knock at the door. Come in! I called out, and then the door creaked open to reveal four gorgeous faces. I grinned at my lovers as they entered the room, and without hesitation, Layla gracelessly cannonballed onto the bed, and the mattress wavered enough to jostle Nia and I from our cuddle positions, with the petite summoner in between us.
Make her, Layla!
Nia giggled as she playfully shoved Layla off her.
You're too much sometimes. Hey, I thought this was a party!
Layla teased the elementalist, and then she planted a wet kiss on the ashen-haired mage's cheekbone. My wife laughed again, and then she turned her head, cupped Layla's cheek, and kissed the brunette's lips. Layla was taken by surprise, and after a second, she leaned into the kiss, and the gorgeous pair began to make out passionately as the rest of us watched on.
That's super sexy,
Syra grinned.
Definitely,
Aaron chimed in. Then Nia pulled away from the summoner and wiped her mouth delicately with the back of her hand.
Why don't you come and join us?
The elementalist asked with a coy smile. Syra and Aaron gave each other mischievous glances, and then they took Nia up on her offer and joined us on the bed. I scooted over so everyone could have enough room, and Freya took the opportunity to climb into my lap.
Hello, my beloved husband,
Freya remarked as she wrapped her arms around my neck. Her golden hair waved over her shoulders, and I ran my hands through it before I ran them down her body and let my hands settle on her full hips. Hello yourself, I murmured to the hawk princess, and her gold-flecked brown eyes were hooded with lust as she looked into mine. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the rest of my women move around and against each other until they were a tangle of sexy limbs. Their clothes became casualties as they were removed and tossed to the ground. And when Freya glanced over at our lovers, she decided to follow suit. I helped the shapeshifter ease herself out of the pale green silk shift she wore, and then I deftly unbuttoned my shirt and added it to the heap on the floor. Then Freya kissed me deeply, and my heart raced as the hawk princess pressed herself tighter against me. My hands rose up to cup her breasts, and the fullness of them surprised me in the best way possible. The Hawk Princess's newly enhanced curves were incredibly sexy, and I couldn't get enough of my pregnant wife. "Maker Freya, you're so fucking gorgeous," I murmured in between kisses, and Freya moaned as I gently squeezed her mounds.
"I want you inside of me," Freya muttered. "And then I want you to take my sister vibes and fill them with your powerful seed, so they may all feel the pleasure of carrying your offspring." "Sounds good to me,"
Aaron spoke up, and when I looked over, she'd wound herself around Layla. Syra and Nia were in similar positions, but when they met my eyes, they nodded in agreement.
"Me too,"
Layla said. Not one to turn down the requests of 5 exceptionally gorgeous women, I happily obliged, and I spent the rest of the night entwined with my wives and lovers. Per Freya's instructions, I made sure to fill each of my women to the brim with my seed. And once they were all satisfied, we settled into a cuddled-up nest in my bed. As my women fell asleep around me, my heart raced to the point of near dizziness. I was truly the luckiest man alive. The next morning, as we awoke and readied ourselves for the debriefing with the headmaster, my mood had completely changed from how it had been on the airship. I'd spent an amazing night with my women, and I had this feeling that the meeting was going to go over well. While my friends and lovers hadn't exactly been on board with the plan, Headmaster Sleet and Grand Mage Kennefic surely would be once I explained the size of the horde. There was no way the renowned mages would allow the beasts to roam freely throughout Mistral. Or so I thought.
"That is completely out of the question," Headmaster Sleet paced across his office, and his rapid movements made me feel antsy.
I'd just brought the headmaster up to speed on our tracking mission, and the Storm Mage's cloudy eyes darted around at us as he processed the news. Galahar Kennefic had taken up Sleet's desk, and the Grand Mage's eyes were red-rimmed with fatigue. While his posture was as immaculate and regal as usual, there was something about the slope of his shoulders that indicated he'd had more than one sleepless night. I wanted to reach out to my father-in-law, but the mage was here in an official capacity, and I had to view our relationship as strictly professional.
"Sir, we can't just leave the monsters be," I said, and I tried to keep my tone as even and polite as possible as I addressed the Storm Mage. "A herd of that size could level most of Mistral if left unchecked."
"I hear what you are saying, Griff, but we simply don't have the numbers to engage an entire herd right now,"
Galahar sighed.
"Our forces are spread far too thin, and with the exertion required to destroy one monster, 15 more is just not doable."
"But sir..."
"Grand Mage Kennefic is correct," Sleet agreed, much to my disappointment. "And it is not as if we are simply going to let them be. It just isn't the right time to strike."
"What's the point of having a vast presence if we can't go after an enemy?" I countered, and my volume raised up higher as I grew more desperate. Why weren't they understanding the severity of the situation?
"A large aspect of the military is strategy, Griff. So we must examine this issue as strategically as we can," Sleet continued as he paced. "I believe the best course of action is to hand this off to the research team so they can properly investigate the monster's origins and migratory patterns."
"The research team that isn't here?" I challenged him. The blonde gray headmaster sighed.
"I assured you before you left that the team was on an important assignment."
"And I don't doubt that," I interrupted. "But we can't sit around and wait for them to return when I could save you the trouble and tell you all about the gathering myself."
"We need to conduct research about these giant monsters, look through our various texts and resources, and try to figure out if creatures of their stature have been reported in Mistral's history. And if so, how were they handled?"
Sleet replied. "You knew of the Sycorot and the Vencrimsel," I noted with a raised eyebrow.
So the research must already exist somewhere.
I know them by name and description alone, Sleet corrected with a frown. However, I was not prepared for multitudes of gargantuan monsters of similar statures. We must proceed with caution.
Perhaps we find a way to draw one of the monsters away from the herd,
Gallahar suggested with a shrug.
We can study the creature and then go back and continue to single them out until we've whittled down the herd.
There is no whittling down, I protested, and Gawain shot me a calm down expression. But I ignored the Fire Mage's nonverbal urge. Once one is threatened, the others will retaliate. Herds stick together.
I agree with what you're saying, Griff,
Gallahar Kinnifik assured me.
I wish to keep the citizens of Mistral as safe as possible.
You say that, yet you won't deploy troops to take on the monsters. I cut him off. Explain to me how that keeps the citizens safe.
Griff!
Nia gasped, and the ashen-haired elementalist's cheeks turned bright pink as she looked back and forth between me and her father.
That's enough!
Gallahar sighed, and his tired blue eyes narrowed.
Son, Headmaster Sleet has the right idea. We simply don't know enough about these monsters.
It's our duty to protect the people of Mistral, I argued as my heart started to pound. What good is our magic if we can't use it to keep people safe?
I understand.
Stop saying you understand, because clearly you don't, I shouted. Why am I the only one who wants to take action here? The room fell silent, and I could feel everyone staring at me, but I couldn't look into their eyes.
You aren't alone, Mr. Griff.
We have a whole academy of talented mages, I pointed out to Sleet as I lowered my volume. Plenty of students proved their worth last year during the Magikai Nido. Surely we aren't the only group of mages that can handle active duty.
Of course not, Griff, Sleet responded. There are plenty of students capable of the task, but that isn't for you to dictate to me.
Anger swelled in my chest as I thought about it. While I knew we weren't the only monster response squad carrying out missions for Sleet, it certainly felt like it sometimes. And I was tired of feeling like the only one to carry the weight on my shoulders. Sir, I have been sent on countless missions for the past 2 years, I said. I have been sent to recover ancient ciphers, I've battled with monsters and goddesses, I've been caught in the middle of clan wars and territory disputes. Despite my age, I'm not a child. So please, don't speak to me like I'm some fresh-faced kid who's never seen the world. Merringer Sleet regally sat down in the chair in front of me, and the renowned Storm Mage took a brief pause before responding.
Your passion for heroism is one of the great many things I admire about you, Mr. Griff, the headmaster began,
and his milky white eyes bore into me as he spoke.
I saw it first in Raylor's stead when you jumped into battle to defend the village, despite your lack of formal military training. And I've witnessed it countless times since then. I know, above all else, you want to do the right thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. You're a good man and an incredible mage with a multitude of gifts and talents that surpass those of seasoned veterans.
Thank you, sir, I murmured.
You're welcome,
Sleet nodded.
I implore of you, however, to consider the risk we take if we throw ourselves into an unheard-of scenario. Our teams are understaffed. We've had to dip into our younger student population to balance out our ranks, but that doesn't come without massive costs.
Sleet stood up and began to pace again, but this time it appeared he caught himself and paused, and his hand gripped the back of the chair he'd been seated in.
I want you to know I greatly appreciate your sacrifice and everything you've accomplished since joining the Monster Response Squad. But I wish it wasn't necessary to begin with, he went on after a moment. You're a tremendous asset, but it's come at the cost of your well-being and your education.
I'm perfectly fine, I muttered, Sleet let out a sigh of remorse.
And you're absolutely correct, Griff. Worthy students attend this academy. Ones with gifts that, like yours, will be an incredible addition to our forces upon graduation. Let's take your student Tarowyn Kimble, for example. In her first year at this academy, she has displayed an aptitude for combat summoning. The young woman has talent. But I'm not willing to put any more young mages through what I have put you all through, especially for an enemy we have no information on.
I glanced around at the rest of my team, and my friends all eyed me with varying looks.
Son, Sleet continued, I know you care, but right now you're thinking with your heart rather than your head. Don't patronize me, sir, I grumbled.
Both of you, stop before you say something you regret,
Nia urged, and her piercing blue eyes flashed between us.
Why are the rest of us here?
Layla wondered curiously, and her hazel eyes were bright with defiance. Headmaster Sleet went around and lowered himself back into the leather chair he'd been standing behind. Once seated, he patiently laced his fingers together in his lap and gave Layla his full attention.
Because, Miss Bethel, as a member of the team...
Clearly your only goal is to lecture Griff,
Layla interrupted, and she shifted straight up in her chair.
The rest of us haven't gotten a single word in since we sat down.
We want to hear from you as well, Miss Bethel.
Sleet narrowed his eyes at Layla, and his tone hovered on the edge between stern and assuring.
Trust me, I value your input. So please tell me, how do you feel about the situation?
Layla paused, and I watched her shoulders deflate as she thought about her words.
I don't know,
she admitted, and her voice wavered.
This is complicated, to say the least. I want to say we can take them all down, no problem, but I'm not sure it's true. I don't have the solution as much as I wish I did.
And what does the rest of the team think?
Galahar inquired as he looked around at Aaron, Varlith, Gawain, and Nia. And my teammates' faces were grim as they waited for someone to speak up.
Mr. Prost, Sleet signaled the gypsy out. You look as if you have something you wish to share.
Varlith shifted uncomfortably in his seat, and the surly banisher shrugged as the headmaster and grand mage waited for him to answer.
When Griff asked for our thoughts on going after the monsters, I wasn't on board with the plan, he said. It's a huge herd, and the creatures are far larger than any I've seen before. While I still feel we can't take on the herd alone, I don't know if waiting is the right answer.
Nia?
Galahar asked his daughter, and the ashen-haired elementalist crossed her legs elegantly.
I agree with Varlith,
she replied.
And with the headmaster to an extent. I think more research is necessary before approaching the herd. But I don't know if we have the luxury of time before they attack.
Thank you, Miss Kennefic.
Sleet nodded, and the headmaster stroked his beard absently as he leaned back in his chair. Gawain and Aaron glanced at each other as if deciding who would be next to voice their opinion. But I couldn't deal with the reoccurring vague answers any longer. We were wasting time.
Look, we need to protect the citizens who live out in the wilds. Otherwise, they're going to get leveled just like Adorna, I spoke out. Countless lives will be lost, property destroyed, villages decimated. Those monsters will destroy Mistral if we don't attack now.
Griff, we have to consider the safety of the enclaves. If we abandon our post to go after these monsters, we could leave the enclaves completely vulnerable to attack,
Galahar said firmly.
It's easy to sit here behind the walls of an enclave and preach about safety, I argued.
But what about those who don't have the privilege of a Xanyarstone fortress? Are the people of the wilds less deserving of protection than the citizens in the enclaves?
Of course they aren't,
Galahar sighed.
But,
well, that's the message you'll be sending,
I interrupted, and I fought to keep my voice even as my heart raced.
We owe it to the enclaves to defend them at all costs.
Galahar stated firmly.
That's why they were created in the first place. To keep the citizens of Mistral safe from monster attacks.
I was born and raised in the wilds, I said as I raised my chin. Before I joined this academy, I was out there, rebuilding, fighting, doing anything I could to help people. I saw firsthand what unchecked monsters could do. Maker, I saw more than enough of that in Adorna alone. In all of my time out there, I rarely saw the citizens of Mistral being taken care of by the military. It's time for us to change that and sway their opinions on magic, which will only help our ranks.
The people of the wilds made their choice, Galahar sighed. They had the option to join an enclave, and yet they remained. We must protect those who asked for our protection.
So the people who are out there laboring away so others can live in the enclaves don't matter? I challenged.
That's enough, Mr. Griff, Headmaster Sleet ordered with a frown. This discussion has ceased to be productive. We will not engage the herd at this time. Not without preparation. And that is final.
Headmaster?
It is final.
Sleet interrupted as his mouth pursed into a hard line, and his storm-like eyes bore into me. My hands began to shake, and my vision grew cloudy as I fumed. Before I could stop myself, I rose from my seat and walked out of the office. If Sleet and my father-in-law weren't going to help, I had to take matters into my own hands.